Hello and welcome. You are tuned into another edition of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program, each and every week, I find and feature a theme relating to Appalachian culture and folk life, and then I play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Well, today I've got another really great program for you. I'll be airing part two of my conversation with chairmaker Curtis Buchanan. If you tuned in last week, you heard part one of the interview with Curtis. Curtis is a Windsor chairmaker who lives in historic Jonesboro, Tennessee, and he's been making chairs for a living full-time since 1984. And back in February, I had a great chance to go visit Curtis in his shop, which is located in the back of his house. Fantastic, wonderful, cozy little place. And we got to talk all about what he does and so much more. So today I'll be airing part two of that great conversation. And all as always, we're going to get on into this hour with, of course, some more fitting music.
I saw an old mother with silvery hair. She seemed so neglected by those who should care. Rocking alone in an old rocking chair. Her hands were all calloused and wrinkled and old. A lie of hard work was the story they told, and I thought of angels as I saw her there, rocking alone in an old rocking chair. Bless her old heart, do you think she'd complain? Though life has been bitter, she'd live it again and carry that cross that is more than her share, rocking alone in an old rocking chair. It wouldn't take much just to gladden her heart, just some small remembrance on somebody's part. A letter would brighten her empty life there, rocking alone in an old rocking chair. I know some youngsters in an orphan's home would think they owned heaven if she was their own. They'd never be willing to let her sit there, rocking alone in an old rocking chair. I look at her and I think, what a shame. The ones who forgot her, she loves just the same. And I think of angels as I see her there, rocking alone in an old rocking chair.
Stand by you by rocking years.
Rocking chairs, rocking babies, rock-a-bye, rock-a-bages. Side by side, we'll be together always. And if you hold me tight when you love me, that's all I.
Friend,
I'll be your lover
until the end. There'll be no other,
and my heart has only room for one.
Yes, I'll always love you,
and I'll always be here for you, and I'll stand by you through. Chairs, rocking babies, rock-a-bye, rock-a-bages. Side by side, we'll be together always.
And if you hold me tight when you love me, that's all I'll ask of you.
And I'll stand by you through. Chairs, rocking babies, rock-a-bye, rock of ages. Side by side, we'll be together always. And yes, I'll always love you,
and I'll always be here for you,
and I'll stand by you through rocking years. Yes, I'll be here, and I'll stand by you through our rocking years, through our rocking years.
All right, Rockin' Years there, Dolly Parton and Ricky Van Shelton. And before that, of course, kicking things off this hour, the Everly Brothers with Rockin' Alone in an Old Rockin' Chair. Again, we are talking to a chairmaker here on today's program. So a lot of the music you're going to be hearing today features things about chairs. I don't have, again, any songs about Windsor chairs, so you're going to have to settle for songs about rocking chairs. Windsor chairs do not rock. I did learn that speaking with Curtis, so keep that in mind. Okay, folks, so once again, if you had a chance to tune in to this program last week, I had a chance to sit down with Curtis Buchanan, who is a chair maker who lives over in Jonesboro, Tennessee, to speak with him all about what he does and so much more. And it was so great to be able to go over to Jonesboro and have a chat with Curtis. What a great person. And thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with me for this program. So I'm going to go ahead and just get on into the second part of our interview. Actually, first to start things off, I'll be airing a little bit about what Curtis does, just in case you didn't catch that interview last week. So this may be a little bit of a repeat, but here in this clip, Curtis talks about what a Windsor chair is and how he got started in chair making. So let's go ahead and dive on in.
Thank you.
about what is a Windsor chair. So you're a chair maker, and what does that mean exactly? Is it a certain style and type of furniture that you have taken a liking to?
Yeah, so Windsors, the Windsors that we're mostly familiar with have plank seats and vertical spindles, turn legs, and a bent back, usually a loop. The bare definition of one is all the parts stop at the seat. So the legs join into the seat, tenon into the seat, and stop there. They don't. The rear legs do not go past the seat to form the back. So a post and rung chair is like a ladder back chair. You know, you make a frame, and the rear legs, the post, go up on past the seat and form the back. And I mean, you've really only got three ways to keep your butt 18 inches off the floor. I mean, really. And one of them's a Windsor chair, and one of them's a post and rung ladder back chair, and the other one is a hybrid between the two, and that's it. So yeah, that's the simple explanation, is all the parts stop at the seat. But typically they have a carved plank seat that if they're made right, it's comfortable. It's carved comfortable. And spindles in the back that go into a bent back. But there's so many different versions of them. Most of them from the 18th century. And then there was a few versions that came around in the early part of the 19th century. And then most people forgot about them. And there was factory still continued to make a few models. And then about, somewhere in the 70s, interest in them came back, interest in buying the old ones. So the problem with the old ones is they're old. Mm. And a chair that needs to hold up somebody that weighs a couple hundred pounds, you know, while they're having fun sitting at the dinner table drinking too much wine. And you don't want them sitting in some old chair that you just paid a bunch of money for. So it gave a market for chair makers like me. I was early on in it. There weren't too many people doing it whenever I started, but there were some. And now it's just exploded. So there's a lot of good makers out there all over the country. And really, it's even gone into other parts of the world. It went American chairs, they came from England originally, Windsors did, 1720s and 30s, the idea. And then we made ours just purely American, mainly because just different woods, but different personalities too. Now there's quite a movement in England to make American Windsors among chair makers.
That's interesting,
Yeah, and there's a lot of people in Australia making them, South Korea now for some reason. There seems to be quite a few makers there, and a smattering around other parts of the world, but those are the main places. But yeah, it's gotten real popular now, especially for woodworkers to learn, because it can be made with very small tool investment, just a few hand tools, and then your wood is cheap because you're working from the log, not buying expensive boards that have been sawn and dried.
What's the difference? I'm wondering a little bit about the benefit of using the green wood as opposed to what you just said, like dry wood. Because in my mind, I never imagined that these chairs were made out of like green wood. Right. What's the?
Yeah, well, it was new to me too in the 80s. I thought, what is this? You're working wood straight. You can't do that. Well, yeah, you can do that, and it's been done for centuries. So, I mean, one advantage I just mentioned, you don't need a big power tool shop to cut this dry wood. So the wood is soft whenever it's green. So it's easy to cut with knives like my draw knife. And it's a lot of fun. There's no dust. There's all kinds of advantages.
Oh, yeah.
but also I split it out of the log. So I need good, clear, straight grain stock, so in order to split it, and it'll split straight, And then I follow those long wood fibers with my knife. So the split follows the way the tree grew. So you're taking the strength the tree has to weather a storm, and you're trying to put it into this chair uncompromised. And a saw doesn't know where that goes. So, and then, so now you can't put the chair together with the wood being green, but you make the parts while it's green. And then I selectively dry parts. So some of the parts in the chair are a higher moisture content. They would be what we might call air dried. So they still have a little bit of moisture in it, maybe 15% moisture, something like that. And then other parts would be super dried, and I do that in a little tiny kiln that runs off of light bulbs, and it will dry it down bone dry. And then when the chair is put together like that, one part swells, the other part shrinks, and that's what holds it together.
Wow.
Is that. So you get that advantage with working a green wood.
So there's no glue or anything that's kind of keeping the parts together? It's just how it shrinks and expands?
That's the main thing. I use glue Windsors. People have always used glue with Windsors, even going back to the 18th century, using animal hide glue, which is what I use too. But post and rung chairs, ladder back chairs, done in traditional families in the Southern Appalachians never use glue. They only use the expansion and shrinkage. Back in the 90s, I wrote an article on a bunch of families that were still making chairs that were traditional families that had been making them for generations. And I never ran across one person that was using glue, and their chairs don't come apart. Windsors are a little different, so there's some joints that would require some glue. Other joints you could get by without glue, but it's cheap and easy, so I throw it in there. We call it insurance.
What's kind of your advice you could give to someone who's starting out to go along this path of, you know, working for yourself in a way?
Yeah. Well, I do get asked that a lot, especially by young people coming through.
People like me. Tell us what we should do.
I have no answer. I am amazed that I've been able to do it. Absolutely amazed. One is you have to have a partner that supports you 100%, or it would be miserable. It's just not going to work. They've got to understand this is what makes you happy. And but you've also got to understand that they expect some money coming in from it. And Marilyn did both. You know, she supported me completely. And at the same time, it was like, you know, this chair making thing doesn't work out. You know?
Yeah.
So then there just has to be this incredible passion behind it that, almost nothing else matters. I mean, certainly it's not as important as your family, but it's got to be one of the most important things to you to be able to do this every day. And you've got money. Like I said, being able to make a living is a motivation part, but making money and piling it up or whatever, or having the things it buys, can't be what you're after if you want to. I mean, you see these musicians show up at a gig and what are they driving, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, they just want it to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they don't care. They get to do this and they're just thrilled to death. And it's the same thing here. You know, it's you just are motivated by other things, by your work and working with your hands. And you know, the other thing that happens is I think when your brain and your hands are connecting at a certain level, it's a natural drug that does more than any drug could ever possibly do. It feeds you in ways that nothing else can, and that's what keeps you coming back to it and keeps you coming back to it. And one of the reasons it does that is because if you're working at a high level, then the risk factor has never been eliminated. The risk factor is not 50%. If you were a musician and you were only able to play that song well 50% of the time, that wouldn't be very good. But if you knew there's always the risk of you messing up, but you could do it and you could come through with it if everything was humming, if you felt great, everything was doing right, then you could pull it off. And when you do pull it off, you get a high and you feel so good, you know, because you know this took 20 years, 30 years of playing this thing over and over and over again. There's a young fellow that lives next door to me who plays the cello. He's in college right now, but he is serious about his cello. And he was in here carving a spoon with me, and we were talking about repetition. And he said, my favorite cello player plays scales 3 hours a day. Now, that's pretty over the top there, but he said, and when you watch him play, it's effortless. Said his bow just floats across the strings. And so, you know, you have to have that. You have to have that, or you're not going to make it. And or if you do make it and you don't have that, you're not going to enjoy it because it's too much work for very little money.
Cabin on a mountain, so first cuckoo till the fourth day of July.
Speaking with you here today, it really feels like you have a very positive outlook on life. So what's your philosophy on life, and I guess in terms of being an artistic individual who's made a living doing so?
Well, I hope I have a positive attitude on life. My parents are both real optimistic people. They're 95 and 98 and still optimistic.
Wow.
My 95-year-old mom, she's just excited about the zucchini she found at the farmer's market and what she's going to do with it. You know, she's from Italy, so she loves zucchini. Oh, I found this a zucchini. I try. One of my goals for many, many years has been to attempt to set up my day You actually plan this. It's actually a planned thing, to where I enjoy every minute of it, not just part of it, not just 1 hour of it. Now, you can't do that. You fail. But the goal is to attempt that as every day if I possibly can. So how can I set up my day to where it helps me do that? I love carving the spoon every morning, and carving the spoon brings in some income. Well, all of that makes me happy. Both of those. So trying to set it up. So trying to think of the day. Also trying to think of the day in terms of, I have to come down here to work. I have to come down here to make chairs. But you can also say, I get to come down here to make chairs. My dad just was saying the other day, he's 98, and he used to split my logs for me a lot of times. He split them up until he was 90.
Wow.
And he was asking me what I was doing. I spend the night there, six nights a month. And just the other day when I was over there, he was saying, now, what are you working on right now? And I said, well, I've just split up an oak log. He said, boy, do I wish I could get out there and split up that oak log. And we need to remember that, not forget that. So try to enjoy. And I do like splitting the oak log up, although I have to psych myself up.
Yeah.
it's a lot of work.
Well, I'm definitely going to take some of that advice and go through the rest of my week, with a, I don't have to go to work. I want to go to work. I'm getting something out of this. So. Why is it important to carry on this craft, a very niche craft, you know, chair making, especially here in Appalachia? There's so many artistic, creative individuals here in the region. And, yeah, what's your take on that? Why is it so important to keep you to do this craft and to be able to educate others and share with them your knowledge?
I mean, I don't know where it fits into society. I mean, I think it's crazy that people are making things by hand, but it's crazy that people are still playing music live when you can just listen to it on the radio or your Spotify or whatever, but it ain't the same.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
but you can, you don't need it. You don't need to buy a handmade chair. Chairs are all over. And so I really don't know how it fits into society. I know how it fits into my life, but what I do view it as is when you break it down to just an individual, and I've had quite a few younger guys come through and work with me, and there's been four in particular who have apprenticed with me, and they're all out there making a living at it, and I loved having them here. They gave me every bit as much as I gave them. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Two of them are showing up at the end of the week, and we're working on a new design together, and they're going to be here for 3 days. They've gotten to know each other. One of them lives in Vermont, and the other one lives in Raleigh. I look forward to that, to getting back together with them. So it's important to them. It's important to me, and it was important that I played a role in enabling them to do this. And there comes my train.
Yeah, there's the train right on time.
Which I love.
My grave, no more good time, yeah, I'll crave. ocean to the wide Pacific shore. From the queen of flowing mountains to the South Bell by the shore. She's mighty tall and handsome and known quite well by all. She's the combination on the Wabash Cannonball. She came down from Birmingham one cold December day. As she rolled into the station, you could hear all the people say, there's a girl from Tennessee, she's long and she's tall. She came down from Birmingham on the Wabash Cannonball. Eastern states are dandy, so the people always say, from New York to St. Louis and Chicago by the way, from the hills of Minnesota where the rippling waters fall, no changes can be taken on that Wabash Cannonball. Here's to Daddy Claxton, may his name forever stand, and always be remembered round the courts of Alabama. His earthly race is over and the curtains round him fall. We'll carry him home to victory on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, the rumble and the roar, as she glides along the woodland through the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engineer, that lonesome hobo's call. You're traveling through the jungles on the Wabash Cannonball.
The Wabash Cannonball, Roy Acuff there, and Elizabeth Cotton's Freight Train. We had to get a couple train songs in there as the train was rolling through during our interview with Curtis there, which was recorded back in February of this year out in Jonesboro, Tennessee at Curtis Buchanan's chair making shop. It was a lot of fun going up to visit him. And if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman. And of course, we are featuring a conversation with Curtis Buchanan, a chairmaker who lives in Jonesboro, Tennessee, here on today's episode. This is part two of our conversation. You can listen to part one of this interview if you go to Listen Radio Bristol and check out the Mountain Song and Story program archives, show archives. To check out part one if you like what you hear today and you missed last week's episode, go check that out. We're going to get on into the rest of this interview, rather. Here, we got a little bit left to go.
Yeah, I love one thing that I don't know when I realized it, but it was years ago, was the sounds that go on in the town and how much they're a part of my day and part of my life. I don't have any music in the shop. I love music, but I don't want it just droning during the day. And I certainly don't want some political pontificator talking in my shop. I'm not going to have that.
Yeah.
and so I like my shop. I like it quiet. And so I can hear the wrens and the cardinals and et cetera, but also the sounds of the town. I mean, you can't miss the train.
Yeah, that's a big one.
But there's the courthouse clock, and there's the sound of the mail truck. I know her starter on that on that mail truck, and I can hear it. I go, oh, the mail's just been delivered. I know the sound of the neighbors and their cars. I know their driveways and their tires running on the driveways. It's amazing how that becomes part of your day, and it's an integral part of your day. And it's almost saying, yep, the mail's being delivered. Everybody's moving along like they do every day. So you can just concentrate on making your chairs. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know, everything's fine out here. Just don't worry about it. You know, just make your chair. And that's what those sounds say to me. The, you know, the courthouse clock's still chiming, and you know, I can hear voices down in the park.
Yeah.
You know, if I happen to be in the shop on a Saturday, there's always a wedding down there.
Oh,
so I
yeah.
get entertained by Shania Twain or something. You know.
I got the invitation that you sent me. You wanted me to see you change your name. I couldn't stand to see you wed another. But dear, I hope you're happy just the same. I'd planned a little cottage in the valley. I even bought that little band of gold. I thought someday I'd place it on your finger. But now the future looks so dark and cold. Wedding bells are ringing in the chapel. They should be ringing now for you and me. Down the aisle with someone else you're walking. Those wedding bells will never ring for me.
Darling, let's turn back the years and go back to yesterday. Let's pretend that time has stopped and I didn't go away. Happy. Love wasn't meant to bring us tears. Love like ours should never die. So darling, let's turn back the years.
Fancy that I see a bunch of roses, a blossom from an orange tree in your hair. While the organ plays, I love you truly. Just let me pretend that I am there. Wedding bells are ringing in the chapel. They should be ringing now for you and me. Down the aisle with someone else you're walking. Those wedding bells will never ring for me. Those wedding bells will never ring for me.
Big question here. So what's the most what's the most interesting thing about what you do? We've already talked a lot today, but what's the most likable and most interesting thing about your craft here?
Oh, gosh.
Told you it was a big question.
What's the most interesting? I mean, I love all of it. I don't know. My shop, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Love my shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted a place. It's small. It's 16 by 20. It's full of doors and windows. The outside can come in. I wanted a place that was so pleasant that you would want to come down there and just sit. Now that's what I wanted.
Goal achieved.
And
I can speak.
And I love it. It's just great. And you know, it's funny when I first built it. You know, it's a timber frame shop. So, and I built it. And I was thinking, well, you know, I'm gonna build this timber frame, and it's this righteous way to build a building, and it'll outlast me. My shop will be here for years. And I thought, yeah, that's the way to do it. And just a couple of years ago, I was reading an interview with an old woodworker. His name was Art Carpenter. He's passed now, but he was out in Northern California, just in Marin County, just north of San Francisco, and he's a real well-known guy, but I didn't know much about him. And in the interview is talking about how his shop is just like a, you know, disaster. It's rotting and everything. And he says, my goal is for my shop to disappear soon after I'm gone, to disappear back into the earth. And I went, whoa.
Yeah.
Now that's something to think about right there.
Yeah.
But I missed that one. My shop's not going to go back into the earth anytime soon with termites get in it.
Yeah.
But I guess that would be the thing that I enjoy the most is that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are running about out of time. So where can folks go to learn more about what you do and where they can see some of your work on display? Can people go somewhere to see that? I know they have your website. Where else can they go to learn more about what you're up to?
Nowhere.
They gotta
the website. I've got about 120 some YouTube videos showing how to make chairs and showing how to sharpen the tools. That could watch those. Other than that, that's about it.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and I'm so glad we got a chance to come and visit your shop here in Jonesboro. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony.
Comes so neat and so all the money that he makes, he brings to me to show. He works with his broad axe all day and sits by me all night. Oh, my little carpenter, my whole heart's delight.
J.P. Harris, the little carpenter there, and before that, John Prine with Wedding Bells, Let's Turn Back the Years. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock, each and every week right here on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past programs if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page, which is found over at listenradiobristol.org. You can find the show archives up there to check out last week's episode, which is part one of our interview with Curtis Buchanan. Special thanks again to Curtis for taking the time to speak with me for these episodes. It was so much fun going to visit his shop and speaking with him. Thank you again. As always, I've got today's playlists and materials on the show on the blog page, so go check it out. You can find Curtis's website, and you can learn more about what he does over there on the website, which I'll have links to. Okay, folks, so I've got to go ahead and roll out, but I will catch you right here next week for another edition of Mountain Song and Story. My name is Tony Doman. I'm going to leave you today with one more song to take you out on, Little Cabin Home on the Hill by Flat and Scruggs. I'll catch you next week.
It seems there's a longing for you still. All I have to do now is sit alone and cry in our little cabin home on the hill. For someone has taken you from me and left me here alone. Just listen to the rain. Just listen to the rain.